Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 7 through 12 of The Tower of Nero. I liked that. I think I give him too little credit, Rick, because Rick. In the sense of I'm always surprised. Like, I was super surprised in Percy Jackson when I saw that he had already laid the groundwork for the seven, the prophecy of the seven. Mm-hmm. And then I was again really surprised when Trials of Apollo was kind of already laid into the end of Heroes of Olympus. Mm-hmm. And so I'm seeing it now, these chapters, he kind of starts laying the groundwork for the sun and the stars.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm always like, wow, he like thought ahead. And it's also funny because he's making these books back to back to back. Like, he's churning them out. So the idea that by the time he'd gotten this last book to his editor, he had already like pitched and started on The Sun and the Stars is hilarious to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny when I see him plan things out, because I know there are so many random plot points that are like, don't make sense. Or like, he forgets how old Hazel is. And I'm like, yet he's planning out these like really big plot points. He just struggles with the details. You know, some people are detail people. Some people are big picture people. Isn't that like a Myers-Briggs thing?
I think so. I don't know.
One of the two letters. Yeah.
Must be F. It. Intuitive or feeling?
No, it's the sensing or intuitive. I kind of decided I don't really care for Myers-Briggs anymore because it told me my type was the rarest, and I've literally met so many people with my type that I think it's lying. I just want to
You don't
feel special
anymore. I'm
I don't
so
feel
sorry.
Special, and I've met so many people with the same type that I'm kind of like, you're not like me. And so I'm like, I don't think it's that accurate, you know?
Well, but you love the Virgo.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the whole chart of it all. There's so many different aspects. And there's a lot. It's the whole thing of it all.
I'm so sorry that you and Myers-Briggs have broken up.
Yeah, me and Myers-Briggs and me and manifesting.
Oh, yeah. No more manifesting.
Yeah.
Well, here, a summary of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to head back to camp, gather the troops, specifically Nico and Will, for the next steps of our adventure.
I love being back at camp.
Me too. And I mean, that's the idea, right? It feels so homely and like, we've returned.
And it's funny compared when he compares it to like Camp Jupiter, because it's so much more chaotic, but in a nice way.
Yeah, it just feels cozier.
Yeah, I don't know that a lot even happens in these chapters. It's just kind of like back to camp.
It's like cozy.
So cozy. All right, I got chapters 7 through 9. So chapter 7, Chariot of Dam. Nation, why stoppest thou here? I don't use your app. Mm-hmm. He kind of slipped into the arrow of Dodona speak there with stoppest. Stoppest thou here?
Thou here, yeah. Mm-hmm. No one asked for that.
No, the arrow's not even in this chapter. He's just doing it on his own now.
It's funny because I don't know if we mentioned in our previous episodes, but when we saw him, he brought up the haikus. Did we talk about that?
Oh, I don't think we did. He did bring up those haikus. He was basically just like, I hated writing all of them.
He's like, if you think it's a good idea to
don't
do a haiku, he's like, don't do it, especially when you have like 5 books and like, you know, 40 chapters each book to write. That's so
many. These are long books, like, thinking back, the PJO had like 20 something chapters in each book. These are like double that, and he chose to write. Wonder how many haikus total. We'll have to calculate that at the end, whatever 40 times 5 is.
200.
Yeah, but like plus, you know, like some are 43 and 42. Anyway, So it is, this chapter starts off with our old friends, the Gray Sisters, who we haven't seen. I had to Google which book they were in because I couldn't remember. I knew it was PJO, but it was Sea of Monsters. They, if you remember, they gave Percy and Annabeth a ride to camp after,
his school blew up.
His school blew up. one of the many times.
Yeah. Domestic terrorism.
Yeah. One of the many times Percy exploded a school. Yeah. They are those three old ladies who drive really bad and they share one eye together collectively. Meg has apparently also ridden with them a lot before. She mentions, and she enjoys it. Like, this is like a fun ride for her. She says that Lou used to take her on rides on the chariot when she trained really well, which again, I'm like, everything I learn about Lou makes me not like her.
She's not, yeah.
Like, I think we're supposed to be like, wow, Lou was this positive figure in Meg's life and this in her little, like, hellhole Nero family. But Lou is like, you know what we can do as a reward? Get carsick. And risk our lives.
She's like, Meg is actually my dog. He will take her on car rides and then I'll train her. Like, that's all their relationship was.
Yeah, pretty much. The gray ladies don't believe that Apollo is Apollo until he tells them things that only he knew about them, like who they had a crush on. And in doing so, he tells us about him and the Gray Sisters and their history. Apparently, there's a bit of friction between them and Apollo because they also give prophecies, but they're not like prophecies that come from Apollo.
They're an indie band. They're not part of the label.
Yeah, they're not like other sibyls, I guess. I don't know. They were allegedly born from the primal sea gods, so they're like older than Apollo, and their wisdom comes from there instead of from Apollo, god of prophecy. So remembering his history with them, he remembers that they can give prophecies. They were like, we actually saw that we would pick you up. We had like prophetic knowledge of that. And he's kind of like, you don't need to tell me your prophecies. I don't really want to know. He thinks they're just going to like mess with him. And so they start squabbling because that's just what they always do. And they accidentally fling their eyeball onto Apollo. And then Apollo's like, I don't want this. And he's like, can someone get me a napkin? I don't want to touch this. And then they're all like, oh my gosh, he took our eye. We have to give him the prophecy. And he's just like, I really don't need the prophecy. And then they give him a prophecy anyways. Adair reveals the path that was unknown and bears destruction, lion, snake entwined, or else the princeps never be overthrown. So we get more on the prophecy of what are the next steps. Apollo then gives the eye back without trying not to touch it, and they skid to a stop on the road just outside of camp, where they see Dionysus casually standing next to the dragon Peleus.
They're home.
Yay. Chapter 8. I am Mr. A. I am here to fix toilets and also pass out. Apollo loves to pass out. I really thought he was like over that era after not being a zombie anymore. But no, he's still in his passing out era.
Well, the entire first book, he just spent most of it passing out.
And like getting memories and stuff. Yeah. When Apollo sees Dionysus, he feels like a strange rush of emotions and a mixture of emotions. He describes Dionysus as like his little brother that always annoyed him. He didn't always have a great relationship with him. And it's really weird for him to now see like someone in the same position as him. Like, he's not seen any other, it doesn't exactly happen a lot, any other gods that have been forced to live as mortals, specifically by Zeus. Like, both of them have been forced to live like this by their fathers because of something they did that angered their fathers. Their father.
Same father, Zeus.
Same daddy. Gives the daddy issues. And so on one hand, Apollo doesn't really want any of his godly siblings or family to see him like this. And on the other, and also like he doesn't really like Dionysus. He's like, oh God, this guy. But on the other hand, it's the first time that he's seen someone who can relate to his situation and is like, understands what he's going through to an extent, except, you know, Dionysus has been immortal for like a much longer time than Apollo has. So to his surprise, Dionysus embraces him and hugs him. And they, like, reunite, and Dionysus is kind of like, wow, it's really true. They really did make you mortal. And Dionysus also decides he's going to call Apollo Mr. A, and he's going to be his personal assistant. And Meg's kind of like, no, he's my assistant, actually. So that's fun. Dionysus then leads Meg and Apollo down into camp. It's early summer now, so camp is a lot more lively than the last time that they were there. There's a lot more campers. There's new campers that have all been claimed. And last time they were there, it was kind of like, I mean, with Camp Jupiter too, it's like everyone was killed by the war with Gaia. And then the war with the Romans now cause, or the Roman emperor is now causing that. It's just like, it seems much more lively now. Even if the wars have killed the demigods, the gods are still reproducing, so.
They don't stop, won't stop, can't stop.
They don't. Even Apollo, more of Apollo's children show up. So they make their way to the big house where we're reunited with Nico and Will, who apparently were learning how to play pinochle from Dionysus. And upon seeing Will, Apollo just, like, starts weeping. He's like, my beautiful baby boy. He's so nice and beautiful. And he starts crying. And Nico kind of, like, stands in the corner awkwardly. And once Apollo stops crying, Nico just straight up asks, like, is it true about Jason? Because as we know, Nico can kind of sense when people die as well. Like, how he sensed that there was something weird about Leo when Leo, quote-unquote, died and everything. So Apollo confirms, he doesn't really say anything, he can't bring himself to answer, but that confirms it to Nico, and then Nico runs off. But before they can chase after Nico, Apollo then passes out, conveniently.
Because he's been bleeding from the forehead, and then no one has really done anything about it. They just have toured him around camp before healing him.
Dionysus is like, it's time for a tour. It looks like I've been here before. Chapter 9. Breakfast is the meal with pancakes and burnt yogurt and insanity. Sam, also, how do you burn yogurt? I mean, I know they're like burning offerings, but like, I can't imagine a burnt yogurt. Ugh. Apollo suffers from a series of bad nightmares while passed out and eventually finds himself in Nero's throne room. Nero is there. He's surrounded by a line of young people, all his demigods and his weird, messed up imperial family. And they're all wearing purple togas, which signifies royalty. And there is an interesting line where Apollo observes that there's, like, you can really see the impacts of Nero's trauma on all of these young people. And that, like, a lot of the younger kids there are all looking at Nero like he is a god, like he is incredible. While a lot of the older kids look disillusioned or just like not as happy to be there, which is an interesting observation. Apollo then watches in the dream as two Germani bring Lou on a stretcher into the room. Apparently she has survived the fall. Nero is upset that she returned empty-handed and says that they will begin Plan B with a 48-hour ultimatum. Then the dream sends Apollo plummeting down into the earth beneath Delphi to where Python is. Python's voice taunts him. And it says, you still do not see it. You charge around, knocking over pieces, but you never look at the whole board. A few hours at most. That is all it will take once the last pawn falls. And you will do the hard work for me. I imagine he evil laughs right after that and echoes around the walls of the cave.
Ugh, beautiful. I imagine these little nails, like they like, you know, yeah, clasping, like tapping together, like, ooh, evil.
Yeah, and they're probably painted.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for the event.
Yeah, and I had a question of, like, why does Python know chess references? Does he play chess with his little hands?
100%. He and Nero bonded. Nero. They have their little weird love tunnel connection, remember?
Love tunnel, yeah. of their special tunnel. And the other two at first are like a little jealous. They're like, we don't understand that relation. Like, why don't you play chess with me?
No, I think Commodus doesn't understand, but Caligula 100% does. He's like, that's me and my horse. Like, we used to like FaceTime together.
Yeah, with the phone, the horse phone.
We used to play Farmville together on our phones or whatever.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, the horse is dead, though.
Well, is Caligula dead? Yeah, Caligula's dead.
He's also dead. He's with the horse.
Yeah, they're together, so it's fine. They're playing Farmville in the afterlife.
Wherever that may be.
Yeah, Tartarus, the fields of punishment, wherever they are.
Well, is the horse considered a monster?
I don't know. I don't, because it has to be. How did it live so long?
How does it talk?
It's not just a normal horse. It can't be.
So it's in Tartarus and Caligula's in the fields of punishment.
Maybe Caligula will go down to Tartarus to get him. That's the Tartarus book I want.
He would be like, what horse are you talking about?
It's like, I didn't have a horse. Oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy, right? Yeah. Meanwhile, the horse has, like, created a government down in Tartarus.
Yes.
Oh, anything that kind of looks horse-like, he's recruited.
Yeah. That's why that's why the third book was the best.
We should have asked Rick about the horse.
We should have. How does it type on the phone?
Yeah. Rick. How does it answer a phone call?
If I ever got to meet Rick, if we ever got him on this podcast, I think that might be the first question I would ask.
I think he would cry with the amount of questions that we
have. He would talk about his writing process
and like characterization and beautiful things like that. And we would hyperfixate on like Python's hands.
Yeah.
The horse's hooves.
It's hands. Hands really close. Frank
as bees.
Frank as bees. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the last of Apollo's dream, the Python talking about chess.
Oh, yeah.
Then Apollo wakes up in the Apollo cabin, or as he calls it, the me cabin, which I still think is funny. Will and Dionysus come in to find him awake, and Will helps Apollo get ready. Apparently, ever since Apollo's last visit, Will has kept some extra clothes in storage. Like, he's been looking for clothes that would fit his Apollo's Lester body and has been keeping them. And he's like, I just had a feeling you'd come back. And I was like, oh, Will is so cute. And also, I'm affirmed in my decision to adopt Will when I said that was the child I choose. So, it's a good boy.
It's a good one. Yeah. It's a good boy.
It's a good boy. Apollo then showers and dresses, and they head out and connect with Apollo's other kids on the way. There's Kayla and Austin, who have met before, and then there are some younger kids who are just there for the summer. They're not year-rounders, and they're newer. They were probably claimed within the last year, which I had a moment. I was like, how is Apollo claiming them when he's been immortal? But then I was like, I guess before he became. But wasn't he like, didn't he go MIA for like 6 months because Zeus was chasing him?
Yeah, and then he's been a human for 6 months. Yeah.
These are the timeline things that I don't understand.
Maybe Zeus has, like, while Apollo's been MIA, just, like, claimed them on his behalf.
I don't think Zeus would do that.
Well, Zeus wants to have more children at Camp Half-Blood so he can make them do errands.
He can send them out to the grocery store.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do labor himself.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, somehow they were claimed, but their names are Gracie, Jerry, and Yan, and Apollo's like, I don't even remember having these kids, which is very funny to me. Like, one of them is from Hong Kong, and he's like, I don't remember even being in Hong Kong. Damn, Apollo. Like, okay. Also, it's interesting that they don't have other, like, international demigod camps.
I mean, there's so few demigods in general. I feel like having internet will just spread them too thin.
Yeah.
And when they have to fight wars, they will be really hard.
Plus, there's the idea that, like, America is supposed to be where Olympus is now. So I guess they stay within. They don't have their passports ready to go to the other countries always. So they all then head to the dining hall. Apollo sits with Will, who fills him in on what Nico's been going through, because he spots, Apollo notices that Nico now dines with Dionysus himself. Like, Nico's just like hanging out with Dionysus, and Apollo's like, what is going on there? This is a weird pairing. And so Will tells him, you know, while Dionysus kind of sucks, he's also the god of madness. And it's like, Nico's mad. But Nico apparently has been talking to Dionysus for help with his PTSD. Nico, you know, Bianca died, Jason died, everyone's died. Also, he's been hearing voices lately. Apparently, someone from Tartarus has been calling out Nico's name. And I was like, Rick is dropping the little hints for the sun and the stars right here. He's already moved on to that book. He's like, I'm just going to finish this one and be on the next.
I mean, that's how we decided that Blood of Olympus felt, especially 100%. Near the end where he just wanted to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think this one feel, from my memory of this one, it didn't feel as intensely like that. But I think that also when I read this, he hadn't announced the sun and the stars yet.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that was coming. But now reading it, I'm like, oh, I know it's coming. Well, Will says to Apollo that he thinks it might be a good distraction for Nico to focus on Nero instead of these voices he's hearing. Then Dionysus summons Apollo and Will to the head table to talk about everything that's going on. From my notes, the one that I have, Rick mentions the... So when Rick is talking about the Gray sisters, Gray ladies, I always called them the wrong thing. It is the Gray sisters.
Mm-hmm.
He proves to them that he knew them. He mentions Ganymede, who's someone that they all had a crush on him. And then Rick's like, Ganymede is very clearly gay. I actually invented the honey he gay meme about Ganymede. Like, Apollo says that. Which is layered because I don't know if you've seen this, but Rick Riordan. Hang on, I'm Googling it. Someone did, like, a while ago ask Rick if he could, like, someone submitted a question, said, Uncle Rick, can you name Nico's girlfriend after me? And Rick literally, like, responded to it. I think it was a tweet with that image. The honey
That's
he
so
gave
funny.
Me. It's so funny. And I feel like that was, like, a Rick referencing himself a little bit there.
Oh my god, I didn't know he did that.
It's really funny. Yeah, you can Google it, and it has, like, people have screen caps of it. Yeah, it was definitely a tweet.
I'm looking.
What an icon. That's but I thought so that was funny. And I also found it very funny that Apollo was like, I actually made that meme. That meme was made basically to describe Ganymede, who I don't know anything about. But he's gay. And when we went to he was mentioned as being, I think he's in the Chalice of the Gods, which I still haven't read yet. But because he was one of the characters that, like, Rick, during his little presentation, Rick had, like, a little PowerPoint slide. It was adorable.
Oh, yeah.
It was the one that, like, a lot of teenage girls, like, screamed over him. And we were like, who is this? And I'm like, is he, maybe he's in The Sun and the Stars? But I don't think he is, because I'm, like, halfway through that book, and this man is not
You're halfway up. Through that book?
Yeah, I am. It's really slow, because I'm reading it with Mike.
Oh, Mike.
Come
to bed, honey. We have to read The Sun and the Stars.
To read the gay Percy Jackson book. I don't know if this is the only reference to Ganymede. Maybe he shows up in this book and I've erased it from my memory.
Bearer, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I wonder if I'm just, like, being dumb and he shows up in this book and I erased it from my memory. I don't know. My brain, like, isn't braining lately. So, you know, those are all my notes.
Well, thank you for that.
You're so welcome. I'm looking. Okay, no, he was mentioned in the Sea of Monsters, and then he's again in the Chalice of the Gods. I had to Google it because I was like,
so
I was
people
very
just
worried.
Know Ganymede.
He's gay. They scream about it.
I think they really liked the art, maybe associated
yeah.
with him.
Yeah, I mean, it was high. He looked nice. Yeah.
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 If sure. you were one of those children who screamed, please tell us why. And yeah. if it's just because he's hot, like, I respect it.
I respect it, but it was, like, it was a little alarming. It
felt like we were outside of an inside joke.
Yeah, I definitely, maybe there's an inside joke about him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Chapter 10, Huevos Rancheros do not go with prophecies, much like happiness. So Meg and Apollo join Dionysus, Nico, and Will at their table. Mr. D shows Apollo this, like, super cute and fancy invitation that Nero has sent him, inviting him to the burning of New York City.
I Apollo love that Nero sent invitations. That's so cool.
It's like a super formal invitation. It has addresses. Mm-hmm. It says that there's two possibilities. Either you come to the address to watch New York City burn, or Apollo is going to surrender. If Apollo surrenders, then instead they'll have cake. And he also is requesting expensive gifts to be brought by his nice. Guests.
Like, finally, Nero's being fun, you know?
Yeah.
He was pretty boring before. He was just doing traumatizing children. But now this is, like, more fun villain.
Yeah, I like the idea that maybe he went. I feel like he's not as, like, creative as Commodus. Commodus would use Canva and, like.
Yeah.
No, so sorry. Caligula would use Canva.
Well, Caligula would just have the imitation on fire.
Well, I was like, Caligula would use Canva. Commodus would make it with crayons and glitter.
That's true.
And then Nero went to, like, a stationery and got it printed.
Mm, yeah, he wouldn't do it himself.
No.
No. No, Caligula would have the horse make it on Canva.
It's just a bunch of hoof prints and you have to try to interpret it. Nico is frustrated by his latest bad luck. He's feeling really helpless. The fact that he's hearing these voices ask him for help. Jason has died. Just a lot of trauma has happened. And so he just wants to be able to actually do something. So this is where Apollo lists out all of the trauma that Nico has endured in his short life. Which, as I was reading it, I was like, this boy is 15. Like, Jesus Christ. So I'm going to read it. I'm going to do a little reading of all
the Nico
things.
Trauma recap.
Now, welcome to the Nico trauma recap. So we start off with being born in Mussolini's Italy. He survives decades in a time warp reality of the Lotus Casino. He emerges culture shocked and arrives at Camp Half-Blood to immediately lose his sister, Bianca, to like literally a landfill. Doesn't
trash.
Even get a body. Yeah, he then wanders the labyrinth alone because he's an emo, and he thinks Percy's betrayed him, and he thinks he has no friends, and he's being tortured and brainwashed by the ghost man Minos. He overcomes everyone's distrust. He comes and persuades his father to join the Battle of Manhattan as a hero. But then he's captured by the giants and put in a little jar with his little pomegranate seeds. He then wanders Tartarus alone and somehow manages to come out alive. And then also, he comes out the whole time. He's been struggling with his sexuality as a Catholic Italian man from the 1930s.
Yeah.
So,
and then he's like publicly outed too.
He's publicly outed to the only person who accepts him, which is Jason, who he finds as one of his first friends, who's now dead.
It's like Rick is listing it. Like, why did I? I'm so sorry, everyone. It's like Rick is just now realizing that he's been so mean to Nico.
And Nico's like, he's like, this is why Nico wears all black. And he, you know, he owns it. He should. Yeah. He deserves to wear all black if he wants to.
He deserves that black toga.
So after telling us about all of Nico's life problems, Apollo tells the group about his dreams and seeing Python. He asks Mr. D for help, to which Mr. D quickly reminds him that gods don't really interfere with demigod quests. He's like, also, last time I helped anybody, like with the whole Kronos problem, he thought he would be at least granted early parole, but Zeus just sent him back to camp. So Dionysus' punishment is that he's still a god. He just can't have wine. So So he's constantly in alcohol withdrawal, right? And then he also can't go home and see his wife. Mm. So he's just grumpy all the time, which is kind of, I don't know. Anyway, I was like, it's warranted, but not.
Yeah, the punishment wasn't it that he like chased a nymph that Zeus wanted?
Yes.
Which I'm like, yeah, you should be punished for like harassing nymphs, but that's not what the punishment was for. It was because it was a nymph Zeus wanted.
Yeah.
Like the nymph only had value because Zeus wanted it, which is just gross.
Creepy. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that he's whining about, like, he volunteered to help with Kronos as if, like, this is the same thing that the gods are desperately needing these heroes to fix their problem because these emperors are about to decimate all of them. Yeah. But they're like, this is not my problem. I can't interfere. The same thing with Kronos. He's like, well, I volunteered. I'm like, bro, you were about to die. You would have been wiped out. That's the only reason you showed up.
Yep.
Anyway. So anyway, they all doubt Lou's plan. There's too many ifs, and there's almost no guarantee that Nero will... There's too many ifs, and there's a guarantee that Nero is going to burn New York City anyway, even if Apollo does surrender. Apollo tells Nico about the rest of the prophecy, including the son of Hades part, which Will had conveniently left out. So Nico's like, I am actually... Not only am I involved, I'm specifically said to help and be involved. Why wouldn't you tell me about these things? And we find out that it's because in the prophecy, it mentions that the son of Hades will talk to the cavern friends. And Will knows who those friends are. And it's actually talking to them has been destroying Nico's mental health.
My brain, the first time I read this immediately, was like... New York City, the Cavern Runners. Is this Gregor the Overlander?
Imagine.
Is Nico friends with the rats under the ground, the giant rats?
And the bats. But basically, they decide to go, they have to go talk to the Cavern Runners. And so they have to, like, gather some supplies and offerings that they don't really disclose what it is. So they tell Meg and Apollo to rest at camp for the day. There's nothing else they could do. Then they're going to go ahead see Rachel Dare, which is like Will has figured out that Adair reveals the path that was unknown, which is what the Grey Sisters had mentioned, is capital Dare, which is going to be Rachel. I would not have figured that out.
No.
So chapter 11, I apologize to my arrow and undies, and well, everything. Apollo spends his day panic running around while Meg goes to plant squash with the Demeter cabin. She's loving it. She's enjoying herself. Apollo wishes that he could enjoy himself, but he's so guaranteed that he's going to die that he just, you know when you procrastinate because you're so overwhelmed, that's what's happening to him.
Yeah.
So Apollo goes to the Ares cabin to see if Sherman Yang has anything helpful to say about the Nero Tower. I cannot speak today.
The Nero Towel. I don't know why that's funny. It's like embroidered.
It's 100% gold with little tassels on it.
Yeah.
Sherman theorizes that if Nero is storing that much Greek fire, he must have an underground storage facility. And he's going to probably end up using the New York City sewers and pipes and tunnels.
Yes.
To effectively send the fire throughout the city.
The best way to travel.
It is the best way to travel. The sewers. Apollo is like, that's helpful-ish, but still makes him more anxious. So Apollo then goes to the Athena cabin to ask for research and intelligence briefing from Malcolm, who is currently the head counselor. But Malcolm would need 3 to 4 weeks to get it to him, which I was like, Annabeth could do it.
In a day.
Which is what all the time they have. Apollo finally decides to consult the arrow, who tells him that he has to just trust Lou, which is the original prophecy. We also get this random ass, like, Mushu level backstory from the arrow, because I was like so annoyed
so
by
random.
This. Which is just like, I have to bring honor. The ancestors have kicked me out of the temple. I have to go help Mulan. It's so stupid. Because Apollo thinks that bringing the arrow back to the Grove of Dodona will help him and make him more powerful. But the arrow instead tells him that he can't go back because he's just a little branch. And he has to go on this quest because he has to bring honor to himself and prove himself. If he comes back now... The trees will laugh at him.
Even trees are bullies.
I know. This is it. Apollo feels bad. He's like, I can't believe you have such a tragic backstory and like a reason.
The stick.
The stick has a tragic backstory. He's like, I can't believe I've been so mean to you and I haven't been a friend to you and you've done so much. I've taken you everywhere and I keep asking you for things. Like, I'm such a bad person. I hope that we can together, like, be successful in my quest so I can bring you back and you can be proud to go back to the trees.
You little stick.
You little stick. I was like, this is almost as bad as the singing. Almost. Not quite, but almost. Apollo puts the arrow away and goes to talk to Meg, who is in the forest showing off peaches to some local dryads. The dryads scatter when Apollo shows up.
That's
and
fair.
Meg just kind of tells her.
He has
her,
a history with them.
He literally, like, as he's walking up, he's like, oh, I can tell that dryads are hanging out because of my previous dryad stalking days. And I'm like, oh, God, you predators. Yikes. So Meg has had a wonderful day. She's like, I played in dirt. I got to hang out with my siblings. They've also, he noticed that she's been like groomed and taken care of. And
sounds like
clothes
she's
are
a
washed.
I like, she played in dirt. She went to the groomer.
They played, they did, I mean, she is, she was trained. She likes car rides. She's a dog.
Yeah. She's very well, actually, I don't know that she's a well-behaved dog.
She's not a well-behaved dog.
She's
very
really reactive. Yeah.
She's a reactive dog.
I would adopt her.
When Apollo hears all of this, he feels really sad that Meg didn't get to grow up at the camp where she's loved and happy, and he gets extra sad that they can't stay and they instead have to return to the house of her abuse and the scene of her long lifelong tortures. Meg asks if Apollo trusts her since she's literally like betrayed him at this exact spot when they're just sitting at just 6 months ago. Apollo says he sees how she's grown and he trusts her but is afraid that Nero will manipulate her. He kind of, in explaining that to her, realizes that's one and the same. By saying that he thinks Nero's able to manipulate her, he doesn't trust that she's able to fight back. And so he kind of acknowledges that. He also understands that change is a fragile thing and it requires time and distance. So for her to go back to that toxic environment, it's the worst thing she could possibly do. And Apollo relates it to himself. He's been really thinking about and losing sleep over how he can keep his promise to Jason of remaining a good person and remembering the pain and the love he felt as a human. And he fears that if somehow he does become a god again, he's going to be surrounded by arrogant, immortal gods who are going to force him to regress when he hangs around them. Meg tells him that she has to go there to prove to herself that she's strong enough. She wants to see, and she thinks she is, so there's nothing else they can really do either. So Apollo goes to gather his supplies and picks up a new ukulele, which I was like, no, please. He says bye to his children. He keeps crying every time he sees them because he loves them so much and he's so proud of them. Mm-hmm. They then have a wonderful sing-along that night with all the new campers. And he's very happy that none of the new campers kind of realize what's happening. They don't understand the calamity of like what is about to go down if their plan doesn't work. He almost likes that. Unlike the last couple books, the endings have always been very group oriented where it's like everyone's problem now. Mm-hmm. He's happy to kind of take on the small team to try to save as many lives as possible. Mm-hmm. Apollo has no bad dreams or any dreams that night, in fact. And in the morning, he meets up with Will, Nico, and Meg to head to the Dare House in Brooklyn. All right, chapter 12. Billionaire's Warehouse. Grab your chocolate drink quickly. The cows are watching. Argus drives them to Brooklyn to the Dare Mansion, which is like a huge concrete and iron warehouse that's been converted to a house. Apollo notes that this automatically makes it 500 that times larger than the average New York home. And he's also like, Brooklyn is so gentrified these days. Which is like, okay, Apollo.
Why does Apollo have an opinion on that?
Rachel opens the gates for them and leads them into her home. She says that they have the place to themselves so they can talk openly. Also, the cattle are watching, so they have to come inside quickly. They're like, what the fuck is this girl talking about? They go to Rachel's room where there are large essels of, like, essels. Jesus Christ. So they go to Rachel's room where there are large easels of scenes of the last couple books, like each thing that's happened at the end of the book where they freed an oracle or something at one point is painted in like really chaotic brushstrokes.
Imagine, says, like, every painting is just, like, Jason dying.
There is, like, yeah.
Like, everyone who's died, like, just brutal.
She's, like, selling them for several million dollars. She's, like, yeah, my art on Etsy. Rachel basically says that every time Apollo and Meg free or reclaim an oracle, she gets her visions back briefly before they disappear again. Apollo describes Rachel's demeanor as like almost a little bit like an addict who has lost their supply chain. Jeez. And it's like making her lose her mind a little bit because she no longer has a purpose, and she also can still see through the mist. She just can't make connections anymore. So, I mean, Rachel says that it feels like Python's in her brain toying with her. Apollo is horrified and afraid that Rachel, whom he's like, she is my most important oracle. Like, I appointed her and I'm responsible for her. There's a chance that if Python wins and takes over Delphi completely, he's going to have full control over Rachel as well. And he could kill her or, you know, use her as her pawn because he knows what that is.
He loves chess.
It's his favorite game, actually. Yeah. So Rachel points out three cattle cars that are just sitting a couple hundred yards away from them out on the street right in front of the river. Rachel says that they were dropped off, like, in the middle of the night, and the cows just, like, keep looking up to stare at her. She says they also went a little crazy when the group first arrived, so there's some connection. She also says that like, there's a giant mansion north of the waterfront. No one else can see it, but she knows that she's been noticing wild things happening there, like penguins on the patio, just wild shit happening.
Do you know what that is? But this is a reference to the Kane Chronicles. That's the Kane Chronicles house. Because they're in Brooklyn. Yeah.
I thought she was seeing the tower, and I was like, okay.
Penguins?
Yeah, I mean, I just assumed it was Commodus's, like, friends. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. This is, like, a little offhanded, like, reference that Rick is making to his other series.
That makes sense.
Because they lots of animals there.
Yeah.
I had that series once. I remember they had, like, a lot of animals. I think there was an orangutan or something.
Middle school. So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I know, right?
Well, so Meg wants to free the cattle. They've been there all day in the sun with no food or water. But Nico thinks it's a bad idea. We also learned that Nico also is kind of scared of cows, which is like a random fact.
I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the sun cattle really freaked him out in the labyrinth, so that's fair. Yeah. Apollo decides that since cows are calm for the moment, they should instead focus on talking about the Tower of Nero. All right, so I have no idea who the Cavern Runners are. I thought it was very interesting. So we have two characters, both Mr. D and Apollo, who have punishments from Zeus that force them to see the, like, up close and personal, the brutalization of their children. Mm-hmm. But only one of them remains changed. So Mr. True. D actually has become more apathetic. Like, he is very...
Except to Nico.
He loves his mad children. And not even to his own children. Apollo here is in love. He sees his babies and he's like, my children are the best thing I've ever done. Mr. D, like, the only time he showed, like, he ever cares is after one of his kids, one of the twins are killed, and he talks to Percy about it, and he's just like, oh, because their mom would be upset. It's like, okay.
I'm excited about, I remember the Cavern Runners. You're either going to love them or hate them. I'm excited. I love them.
They're going to be giant rats, aren't they?
No, but I wish.
Rachel Dare being like that storyline of her being a cajillionaire, but like an artist. And like she's a big environmentalist. It's so funny. It's giving like Nepo baby model vibes.
Yeah, Rachel's definitely like a Nepo baby, or I don't know if it's nepotism. She's a trust fund baby.
She's a trust fund baby.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, she's like, how can we save the environment? I'm like, I don't know, maybe you should start in your home, bro.
Yeah, like, maybe like, and steal your dad's, destroy your dad's planes.
That being said, she is like, she is a minor, so I can't really tell her to do much.
Yeah, she can't really do that.
Yeah. I don't really know what my predictions are, because I have no idea who the Cavern Runners are. They definitely are going to break into the storage facility, and then they're going to somehow be able to use the Greek fire against Nero, maybe contain it into the tower itself. Or I feel like the Greek fire is going to go off regardless, and they're going to be trying to fight Greek fire, which would be kind of fun.
Can't fight fire with fire.
This last set of chapters is making me increasingly confused on how this book is going to end. Well, I was just feeling so torn about, like, if Apollo's going to stay a god or if he's going to be, stay immortal and stay in Leicester. I think a cool third option that would be really fun, personally, would be if Apollo kind of stays a god mixed with the mortal, like how Mr. D is, and then replaces Mr. D as like the head of camp, because then maybe there would be love in the camp. Like Chiron would be the only one trying to like set up, like Apollo would love it. He would set up so many stupid activities. The kids would low-key hate him every time he sang.
He'd have a lot of musical nights. He'd probably start like a theater group.
Yeah, and by being with the children and staying around all the demigods, he would retain a lot of his humanity. But then he has also, like, we're not going to stop having children of Apollo, which I think would be a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, that's my interesting because he has that, like, that moment where he's talking about his fear for Meg going back into that environment. And I mean, that's the same. It's interesting because his goal this whole series has been to become a god again. Well, I think that was his goal at the beginning and then it's changed throughout.
Yeah.
But it's like, if he becomes a god again, he's essentially doing the same thing of Meg, like going back into the belly of the beast. So.
Exactly. Mm. He still gets to retain a lot of his powers and his gifts so he can protect the people that he loves a little bit better. But, like, not completely. And then he can be at camp. And so he's now surrounded by children that he loves. And that will keep him grounded rather than Zeus and all the other ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I also would love to see, because we've kind of been building up to it, like, Apollo confronting his father about, like, all the abuse he's endured. But I cannot imagine that would go well. Like, what are you expecting change from Zeus? Like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right. Because if we keep, like, this character of Zeus that has been well established since, I mean, like, ancient Greek mythology. If he was ever, anyone stood up to him, he's, like, gonna start a war or something.
Yeah, and people are gonna die because Apollo's like, hey, you were a bad dad.
Yeah, or he's just gonna let them die, like how Jason stood up to him and then Jason died and Zeus was, like, looking the other way. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my hope, is that that's where he ends up. But I have a feeling it's going to be something. I have not been correct on any of the, like, I was like, oh my god, he might stay human just for Reyna and they'll be together. And that clearly didn't happen.
I'm glad that didn't happen. Yeah. That would have been.
All right. Are you ready for some lightning bolt questions?
Yes, indeed. So I was just struck by the idea of Dionysus as an eco-therapist. So my question is, which god do you think would make the best therapist? I guess for you, because, you know, maybe Dionysus is a great fit for Nico. Personally, I don't know.
I would say Hestia, I think. Ooh, I need, like, a lot of, like, warmth and just, like, I would want to talk to someone who's very in-tuned with just homeliness, I guess, and just gentle. I think I need a really gentle therapist.
Yeah honestly, I'm thinking like Hestia or Demeter would be the nicest, because they're definitely like, I mean, Demeter would have like a lot of plants in her office, which sounds fun.
Yeah,
I mean, Rick's version of Demeter would just like feed me cereal, and that's not really like what I want, but you know, the like the god Demeter, it would be, I think, a more calming presence compared to the others. And also Hestia, like, the hearth, the home. I definitely would want a woman.
Yes.
Like, I feel like none I'd be in danger men. With the men.
No, none of these men are safe.
Yeah. I would end up pregnant, and I don't want that. Even, like, you know, Dionysus, god of madness, maybe he could fix my madness, but I think that he'd probably just try to get with me.
Yeah. Oh. It's so hard, you know?
I know. My other question is, if you could bring back any character from, like, Percy Jackson or Heroes of Olympus to just, like, show up in this book who hasn't yet, who would you like to see? Because I feel like I was thinking of, like, Rachel showing up again in this book and it being exciting. So, like, are there any characters that come to mind?
Have we seen Clarice? Was she in the first book?
She wasn't. She's who I was thinking of, too.
Yeah. I would love to see what she's up to. I'd love to see if she's finally, you know, dating a woman.
She's still with her boyfriend, Chris Rodriguez.
Please.
Yeah, I would love to see Clarice again. She was just such a, like, big character in the first series who, like, it was mentioned. I think she, like, went to college in Arizona
U of A or something.
Yeah, which is, like, great. I love that arc for her. But I would just love to see, like, because she was such a bully at first. And then she went through a lot of character development. And I'd love to see more of it.
Yeah. And I would like to see her interact with Apollo. I think it would be really funny.
It would be really funny. I think she'd take him down a couple notches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. My question is, which of the cabins would you consult for a personal problem you were having?
Mm-hmm. Like the kids?
Yeah, so this way that Apollo goes to the Ares cabin because he's, like, trying to see weak points or attack strategies. And then he goes to Athena for intel.
I think, honestly, I would love to, like, consult the Apollo cabin just because there's a good variety, you know? Like, the Apollo is the god of a bunch of things, so the kids are all, like, experts in a bunch of things. Like, Will could, like, you know, give me a whole doctor's appointment free of charge.
Yeah.
He could prescribe me things. And then, like, I don't know what the other super special. I mean, Kayla and Austin were, like, archery and music. I don't know that I want to be serenaded. Mm-hmm. But I'd assume, like, there might be one of them that's, like, because Apollo does, like, prophecy. I could get a prophecy. I could do some tarot reading. Mm-hmm. There's probably, like, a god that he does, like, poetry. I could have someone could write me a poem. I just feel like they could help me, like, physically and spiritually, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I was, like, even thinking Dionysus's kids.
Oh.
Help me plan a party or something. That would be kind of fun.
Okay,
or if,
yeah,
like, I'm dealing with a friend who is having a mental health crisis, I'd be like, hey.
Can you solve their madness?
Yeah, please.
How many kids are even in that cabin? Because he had the twins, but one of them died.
These cabins are pretty full. Hermes has, like, the fullest, but I think, except for Percy and Nico, all of the cabins have at least, like, 10 to 12 children at a time.
Yeah.
During this peak summer.
I wonder if Hermes is still the fullest now that other gods are, like, claiming their children, though.
But it takes a little bit longer, remember? Especially now that the gods, in this over this period of time, and honestly during the split, like, the last two book series, the gods have not been able to claim their children.
Yeah.
Because they're having some kind of communication error.
Yeah.
So I feel like nothing has actually changed.
That's probably true. I'm like, is it that or does Hermes just, like, really get around, you know?
That I feel like both could be true. I mean, Hermes is the god of travel.
I mean, he is the god of travel, so he probably is the one having kids all over. Oh, man.
All right, so next week we're going to be back with chapters 13 through 18 of The Tower of Nero.
Mm-hmm. I think we might get to find our cabin dwellers. I'm not sure. Cavern dwellers. If you are interested in supporting us, the link to our Patreon's in the episode description. The link to send us an audio message is there as well if you want to try and get your voice on the podcast.
Our social is at Camp Hoff. Okay.
Camp Hoffport.
Hoffport.
British man.
I am crashing. Our social is Camp Half Pod. Email camphalfpod@gmail.com. Message us on email or social to join the Discord. I am out of town for the next week, but I will be getting two emails. There's a little bit of a backlog. I'll get to them. I did a good job for a little bit, and now I am back to my old habits. So I will get to them. If you're waiting to hear back from me, I've seen it, I've read it, I've put in a little folder, I will respond to you.
And don't forget to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts. We love seeing your little reviews come in. They're always very funny.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.